is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We're here every Saturday morning right here on News Talk 870. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. John, how are you?
Well, weather getting a little more normal.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know if you can tell. My voice is a little off this week, but McKay, I don't know how you professional DJs do this. I mean, I've been down for like 3 or 4 days, and I was even questionable talking this much today, but that's not good when you get sick in your profession.
No, but I never get sick. I'm 10 feet tall and bulletproof.
Okay, perfect. There you go. Well, we have our special, one of my favorite shows that we do of the year, and this is our October Halloween special, scary real estate and lending stories. We're diving all in on the Halloween theme, and we've also got our in-house lending specialist, Mr. Mike Denslow with Home Street. Mike, how are you doing over there?
I'm doing good. With McKay, I'm enjoying this reprieve that felt like it was going to be winter, and now we got a little bit more fall, so I'm cool with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely it's been pretty. I mean, it's nice that you get the sun and all the leaves changing colors and stuff, and it's we're definitely here for the Halloween special for sure. So to start off our Halloween special, I always like to hit up a crazy national story on, and this week, of course, along with the theme, I'm taking us up to Albion, New York, and what we've got up there is, this is called the Pillars Estate that's for sale right now. Now, this is a Civil War-built estate up in Albion, New York, and you had a gentleman, Tony McMurtire, that bought it a couple years ago, went through, started redoing the whole house, taking it back to its glory days. But some things have been happening in the house. Hmm. In fact, he moved a full-time caretaker into the house, and she doesn't sleep there at night. She comes in the morning to take care of, because she's noticed that at times the piano plays itself. Things have been moved around, and believes that the Civil War era built home is haunted and has a ghost inside the house. And so it really brings up a very, very interesting subject about disclosure of, shall we say, paranormal activity inside homes. And what are the signs to be looking out for if there are haunted homes, or you think there might be a haunted house? Now,
a lot of coming from the closet saying, get out.
Yes, exactly. And a lot of people might be laughing about this subject, but as I brought it up in the office and was doing my research and kind of taking a straw poll at the office, there was two or three of our agents that are like, oh, yeah, I can tell you four houses that are haunted in the Tri-Cities right now. And so,
Ghost Hunters, A&E.
Yeah, so it's a very interesting subject. So we're going to talk a little bit about that.
What houses?
We're going to put a little bit of a spin on this and get with that. Now, before we do, on a lighter note, Zillow produced last week a great article that I will put this under our local story, and that is the best cities in America to trick-or-treat at. So, McKay, top 20 cities that give the most candy with the least amount of walking. So that was our criteria.
Pheasant Run off of Garfield and 27. The whole neighborhood. They're all in. It's great.
McKay is taking it to the local level. I love. Well, I will tell you that Washington did make the top 10 list. It wasn't Pheasant Run in Kennewick. But Seattle was listed as the number 10 city, as the top cities to trick-or-treat in.
So they're giving out their edibles.
There you go. Number one on the list, San Francisco. Number two on the list, San Jose. And number three, Philadelphia. So really, you know, those compact city centers, like you said, probably just townhouse, downstairs, upstairs, downstairs, upstairs. So kind of funny to see that list. Rounding out the top 10 was Long Beach, Los Angeles, Baltimore, Sacramento, Washington, D.C., and Milwaukee, number nine,
wow.
And then Seattle at number 10. So kind of interesting to see, but when you talk about the local neighborhoods, McKay, you bring up a great one. Pheasant Run out there in Kennewick. Houses are close together, master plan neighborhoods, smaller lots. You know, the kids that really get mathematical about this, those are some of the things that you have going on there. So back to today's topic, and that is scary stories in real estate. What are some of the scariest things in honor of Halloween that have happened in real estate? And so as I started to do my research, actually, I didn't have to go very, very far to do this. In fact, last week, a national headline came over, and this one totally just threw me back, you know, when I'm thinking about what we do day in and day out. And in North Carolina, Chapel Hill last week, actually a real estate agent walked in to show a house and found two dead bodies.
Ooh.
Now that would be freaky. And I mean, coming on the whole Halloween theme going on, obviously 911 call, police investigating. I mean, I don't think I'd want to show a house for a couple weeks, Mike. I mean, that's a bad one.
That's a bummer.
And the gang from Criminal Minds showed up.
Absolutely. So when we look back at some of the scary stories in real estate, I tried to take some of these national ones and then relate them back to local experiences. Now, not dead bodies, but I myself, one of the scariest things that had happened in real estate is I was out a couple years ago showing homes, and there was a house that wasn't on our list. And so I pulled up on my phone. The instructions were vacant and show any time. So we said, okay, let's take a look at it. We go into the house. It is vacant. Everything is great. We're walking through the house. There's a closed door in the back as the hallway as I'm walking down towards the bedroom. And I open that door, and there is nothing but a bed in that room and a bag on the floor and someone sleeping in that bed in an otherwise completely vacant house. I mean, this is scary real estate stories. This show day. I closed that door, tried not to make any noise so fast. I turned around, looked at my clients, and I don't want to yell. And I'm like giving them the hand motion, get out of the house, get out of the house. Cause I'm thinking that's a bad situation. Somebody could wake up, they could be scared, yeah. They could have a gun. You know, it gets really scary. Call the real estate, the listing agent as we're leaving, and I'm like, hey, you've got vacant show any time on those house instructions. I don't know what's going on, but there's somebody sleeping in one of the bedrooms of that house. So that was, then that happened to me personally. So I kind of relate that with some of these similar scary stories. And so one of those things that is just, if you're going to be coming back to a home or it's listed as vacant, but you're coming for a weekend and you're going to be staying there, the importance of notifying your agent when potentially you're going to have strangers coming through the house. That's a big one. So that's.
Oh, by the way,
that was one of the ones that was extremely, extremely scary. I'm going to turn it over to Mike and let him tell a couple scary lending stories, or at least one before the break. And
hang on, I got to go get the s'mores.
Yes, you get the s'mores, Mike. what is going on in the lending world that fits our scary Halloween theme?
Well, I'm sure I can come up with a few, but my favorite one is actually not a lending story. It was just at my house 4 years ago, and Spider-Man, about a three-year-old Spider-Man, comes to the door, and his mom's about 10 feet behind him. And he turns around and he looks at her because, I mean, we're at a stranger's door. He's 3 years old. He's looking at me. He turns around to his mom and she's like, say trick or treat. And he says, okay. And he turns back around to me and he says, trick or treat. And I came out with a bowl and I bring it down and he grabs some candy and we're good to go, right? I mean, we're good. And he turns around to his mom and his mom's like, now what? You know what to say. And he turns back to me and he goes, trick or treat again.
Trick or treat again. There you go.
That is one smart 3 year old. He had that thing figured out, and I absolutely brought that bowl back to him and said, "Absolutely,
I love it." That's a salesman there for sure. Get that
I thought
kid.
You were going to say he pulled, you know, like, okay, this is a stick up or something.
Yeah. Get that kid's real estate license for sure. Good. What else freaks you out over there in the lending world?
You know, it's the funny thing is what we always talk about is, you know, be prepared and it's never too early to get pre-approved. I would say several times there's, you know, you're pulling someone's credit and there is something on there that they've never heard of, you know, and, oh, well, I have this much of a payment with this company. Yeah, no, I don't. And it's sitting there. Oh, and it was late last month and, you know, and there's just no reason. There's no story. Absolutely. And the credit bureaus have a mistake.
That is a scary scary lending story, because now you're trying to track down something you probably don't even have the account numbers or anything for.
Yeah. So there's things that we can do on our side to help. Where it gets scary is, oh, I'm fine. My credit's perfect. I want to buy this house. I'm selling this house. And then I'm not going to get pre-approved to the last minute until I find something. And now all of a sudden, there's something on there that's not yours, and your score just took a 100-point hit because there's something on there that, you know, you know nothing about. And so that's the majority of the time, that's the scariest thing that happens. I'll hold back a couple for after the break, but that gets people's attention right away.
Folks, we are doing our Halloween scary real estate and lending stories. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the different laws across the U.S. that require or don't require disclosure of paranormal activity inside your home.
Make sure you stick around for that. We'll be right back on News Talk 870.
Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been going over our Halloween scary real estate special, and I get a kick out of doing this show every year. It's one of my favorites, and we do the research and look into it, and there's some really, really interesting things that happen out there, and you start to kind of look at the different states and how their disclosure laws are. It's interesting. For example, they listed in one of the articles on Realtor.com that, for instance, Virginia, a state, they don't require disclosures of paranormal activity. They define it as an act or occurrence which had no effect on the physical structure of the real property, its physical environment, or the improvements located thereon. So their status on it is it did not affect the physicality of the property, therefore not required to be disclosure.
Obviously, they've never watched. What was the movie?
Believe what you say.
I'm trying to think of the movie Poltergeist.
Yes, Poltergeist. There you go. Exactly. Now then you go to a state like California. And their civil code states death on a property does not have to be disclosed if it occurred more than 3 years prior to the sale. They define this by number of years. But if the buyer asks about deaths on the property prior to this time, then it must be disclosed. Now, one of the ones that I thought was most interesting was the state of New York. Now, New York has kind of its own law that goes over talking about ghosts, and it dates back to a case in 91 that was Stamboski versus Ackley in the New York State Supreme Court. So basically what happened is a buyer sued saying that the seller did not disclose that the house was haunted. And what influenced the court's decision the most is that the seller himself had published stories in Reader's Digest. They had been on 60 Minutes saying that the house was haunted. So he had almost like implicated himself with these stories, but then felt that that was not a necessary item to disclose. So it's interesting because they went, you know, basically on the segment that it was a known fact because the seller had disclosed it. So then I went back and I said, okay, how is this going to affect people wanting to live in a house? We're showing property in Tri-Cities. What are people going to say to me? Realtor.com did the research, did the survey on this. 33% of people would live in a haunted house. 25% are maybes. And 42% said absolutely not. So let's see the room. McKay?
I would be the absolutely, well, I can't say the word on the air, but it starts with H and ends with L. Oh,
okay.
No.
So McKay's a no. Mike?
I would say yes, because I have.
So Mike?
My last house, absolutely. You talk to my son, you talk to my wife. Absolutely.
Okay, personal experience
personal
there.
Personal experience was, and it wasn't a big deal. They were nice ghosts.
Yeah, and a lot of the articles.
Did they clean up after themselves?
A lot of articles I went through on that research. And I actually think I'm in the maybe category. I'm okay with that. If you told me that was the case and what was happening there. So when asked about what would change their mind, and this is just absolutely fantastic about this survey. 40%, okay, it's coming down to the Benjamins, folks. 40% of the respondents indicated a price reduction would cause them to change their mind. 35% said location, being if it's in the right neighborhood and that's the only choice they have, 35% are going to change their mind with the right location. And then 32% said larger square footage for the money. So I tell people all the time, we either have to change the features and benefits or we have to change the price. And it seems like when it comes to haunted houses, that is going to be the same situation. So the survey, the results, and the stories out there were a lot of fun. And McKay was saying, you know, gosh, which houses are haunted? It's interesting when you start talking about that subject, how many people feel like they know or they've been in a home like that. To some, it's no big deal. To others, they're like, do not get me out of this house, Lance Kenmore. This is not the so it's really fun to kind of look at that research, and some of it is lighthearted, but some of it's very serious, especially if that's where someone is choosing to live and spend the majority of their time.
Well, it's like that Slim Jim commercial where the guy doesn't like the house and he looks at the agent and he winks at him and the guy opens the closet and says, this is where they found the body. Bodies. Have you seen that?
Yes, absolutely. We're out of here. Thank you very much. Let's go to the next one on the list. So one of the things, you know, that to talk about, and I was laughing because then I went on to, in my research, to another article, and I was absolutely laughing. There's actually been articles out there, how to spot a haunted home. Mike, in case you were wondering, the number one item on the list was if a home has a cemetery on the property, mind you, which is a whole nother set of disclosures, or the house is over 100 years old near a battlefield. I think some of these apply to the East Coast for sure. Also, look for homes that have quick turnover in a short period of a time. So if a house has been sold three different times within, say, a year and a half, you might want to look into what is going on that property. And then another thing to go over is talk to the neighbors. And that's not just good advice for deciding if a house is haunted or not. That's good advice for real estate searching when you're looking. If you want to know what the traffic patterns are like, what the general feel of the neighborhood is, catching a neighbor outside working in their yard and mentioning you might be interested in moving into the neighborhood is a great way to collect some different opinions on what's going on in the neighborhood. I'm going to go back to Mike and talk a little bit about some more scary stories in the lending world.
Okay, first one from last year. I had a guy tell me he made a certain amount of money, so we ran his pre-approval and said, okay, well, get me the pay stubs to, you know, young guy out of college. Told me, you know, he was making this much a year. I got the pay stubs, and I was like, well, you don't make what you said you made. And he was like, what do you mean? And I was like, oh, well, you said you made, let's say, 50 grand, and you actually only make 40. And he was like, well, that's wrong. Yeah. The company that he went to work for about 5 months had been paying him less money, and he didn't realize it because he just got the checks and saw the net number. So
thought it might have been taxes or
yeah,
something.
Exactly.
Gosh, these taxes in Washington are out of control.
That's right. So we solved that. He went back to his employer. They fixed the error and got it solved. But for a little while there, he was like, what
the heck?
That
is scary on a lot of fronts. Wow, I bet he was glad he applied for a mortgage with you.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking, too. The second one is a tax return where someone else prepared the tax return. The client had sent me the tax returns for review. I take a look at them, and I'm like, well, I don't think we can pre-approve you for pretty much anything because of these write-offs. And the tax preparer had made an error in how much they were writing off. And again, let's use the, okay, well, I make $50,000. And they had some write-offs of some different things. One of the things is called non-reimbursed expenses, which this person had about $4,000 for over the year for vehicle use and different things. And the tax preparer had put $40,000.
Oh, my gosh.
And so now all of a sudden, oh, wow, I got money back. You know, and wait a minute, what happened? And yeah, so
those you do see some scary stuff over there on your side of the table for sure.
Absolutely, we do. And again, no joke, going back to what I always say, get me everything as early as possible. Next year, oh, next summer, next fall, we're thinking about doing this. It can't hurt to look at things early.
Or when the guy walks in with a shoebox full of money and says, I can't tell you where I got this.
That could be a little bit of a problem.
Yeah, that's not happening at our office, for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, there is, whether it be on the lending side of things or the real estate side of things, there are some extremely scary real estate stories out there. I'm going to end with the last one. This was a submission from an agent that I know in Arizona. And goes back into 2009, 2010, when we're going through the lending crisis. Massive, massive national builders. There had been huge, huge plats with 1,000 lots down there, and none of them were selling. Well, an agent down there, he actually got one sold for somebody, and there was only like one or two houses in this whole neighborhood. The streets are in, the gutters are in, you know, and then everything falls apart. Mm-hmm. And he got one of these lots sold and sold it to a guy, a private builder that only built a couple houses at a time. Sold him the lot. The client goes out there and he starts building the house and he gets the foundation up. And he gets the house framed, and then he's going through a building inspection. And with that building inspection, the building inspector takes a look at the paperwork and the foundation. They had missed it in during foundation, and they had missed it during the first part of framing. And the building inspector looks, and he can't make the lot numbers match up to the house. And so this builder had actually built the house on the wrong lot. He was one lot off. Normally with double and triple checks with city and county codes, that wouldn't happen. But everything was in such mayhem back then. And instead of one builder buying a development like this, they had sold these lots off to individuals to get out of it. So it was a big mess. So the builder calls his agent. He goes, I have a problem. And the agent's like, yeah, this is really scary. So what they end up doing is they end up going and they make an offer with the person not really knowing that now has a house on their lot. They end up making an offer on that lot, and he buys a second lot, and they were able to get it under contract and buy it from this other party before there was a massive, massive litigation problem. So that is an extremely scary real estate story. Building a house on the wrong lot, especially property you don't own, and if there's a bank involved, it could get really scary really fast. So happy ending to that story, but we do see things like that, and this is why title companies and our county planners and our building department, a lot of doubles and triple checks and balances to prevent those type of things from happening, but they still can happen, and it is scary when that does just because of the financial ramifications.
Yeah, I had an appraiser actually go out on a custom construction loan here in town and do an appraisal on a lot with the house that was going to go on it, and they went to the wrong lot. So we're looking at the pictures of the, wait a minute, this isn't even the lot. They've done these improvements and different things, and we talked to the appraiser, and they're like, no, I was on this one, because, yeah, and you can imagine, if it's all just dirt.
Yep.
And, yeah, so, yeah, I've seen it here, too.
Yep, we've seen it here in Tri-Cities, too. So you got to definitely keep an eye on those things. Watch out for those details. Well, folks, thanks for listening in with us today. It's a fun show for us to do. I hope you got some knowledge out of it. But there are scary stories in real estate. On Tuesday, am I getting that right, McKay?
Yes.
On Tuesday, please be very slow in the neighborhoods with all the kids out and enjoy. It's one of those times when we've sold people homes and they're in neighborhoods and their kids get to go out. I feel it's really a sense of community with people walking around and going to each other's homes. And it's a lot of fun, and I really see that as a big reflection of real estate. So have a very, very happy Halloween. And we will be right back here next week.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Move.